And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand in your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show, tap the subscribe or follow button, and you'll get a new program delivered each and every weekday morning. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by the Law Group, Melissa Gott and her team. Visit them online, lawgroupnc.com. We'll hear more from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. There was a major announcement at the White House yesterday, and the announcement actually came, or the kind of the beginning of this was a few months ago after the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill, which was signed into law back on July the 4th. But there was a major announcement yesterday at the White House, which included Michael and Susan Dell from the Dell Computer Company. Michael Dell started that when he was in college in Texas. And so we're going to get into that announcement. But it's bringing forth a bigger issue that we face as a nation. And the title of today's show is Strengthening America's Middle Class. And there are a bunch of different ways that you can take this. And I'm not, don't have the ability to cover every single possible avenue of that this morning. But I want to focus on financial literacy. This is something that I was very fortunate at a young age, like literally when I was in high school, to stumble upon the teachings and the work of Dave Ramsey, who I'm sure many of you are familiar with and have either listen to his radio show or his podcast. Maybe you've read some of his books. Maybe you've gone through his course called Financial Peace University. I think that's still the name of it. There's been some name changes over there. And I was very, very fortunate to stumble upon that at a very young age. Now, I understand that that makes me rather odd and weird as a high schooler listening to Dave Ramsey. That would not be described as normal in most cases and in most senses, but it has dramatically changed my life. And it put me on a path to something like home ownership, which I had the ability to do, purchase a home at the age of 22 years old, which in today's America is not a common thread either. That's not something that most 22-year-olds have the ability to do. And I'll note at the time when I purchased that, when I purchased my home, I was not making a lot of money. It just wasn't the case. I'd been in North Carolina a couple of years, had some good opportunities, but was not striking it rich by any stretch of the imagination. And the reason I was able to do that was in large part due to having strong financial literacy skills. And so you'll hear a common complaint from individuals, and I'm not even going to say that it's politically aligned or politically motivated. It does tend to be a larger talking point for those on the political left, but you'll hear consistently that due to whether it's politicians in Washington, D.C., the overall U.S. economy, whatever the figure of blame is, that the middle class just can't get ahead. And there is, in fact, a lot of truths to that. I mean, we've seen a struggling U.S. economy since COVID-19. Leaving 2019, going into the beginning of 2020, the U.S. economy was in phenomenal shape, historically in phenomenal shape. You had, of course, the pandemic start making its rounds in early 2020, and it has been an economic mess since that period of time. There's been some ebbs and flows. Things have gotten better. Things have gotten a little bit worse in some cases. But all in all, since the beginning of, or middle, probably more accurate to say, middle to late 2020, the U.S. economy has been struggling mightily. And a lot of middle-class families, myself included, have dealt with that pain, have dealt with those struggles due to record-high inflation back a couple of years ago, interest rates absolutely ballooning, going through the roof, whether you're looking at purchasing a home, purchasing a vehicle, trying to take out a loan, the interest rates are just incredibly, incredibly high. And that obviously has an impact on individuals who are in the position where they have no other opportunity but to borrow money. And so, yes, there are economic conditions that you and I, the vast majority of us, have absolutely no control over. Inflationary pressures, out of control spending in Washington, D.C. You and I can't really change that. Now, we can vote for individuals that maybe approach things a little bit differently. Sure. But when the rubber meets the road, in the grand scheme of everything, we're not having a major impact. If there's 9.5% inflation, which is what we saw in the middle of the Biden administration, if I'm being frank, there's not a whole hell of a lot that you can do about that. But backing up from that a little bit, we have a larger issue, and this might seem like a little bit of a pandering, but I something I believe strongly, and it's something that I have talked about a lot when I was here on the radio in Wilmington, talked about it from time to time, and we really haven't delved all that much into it here just due to the busy news cycle. But we have a financial literacy problem in America. We absolutely have an issue with financial literacy, smart financial decisions, and it most predominantly affects the lower middle, the lower class, the lower middle class, and into middle class Americans. We have a financial problem. We do. Plain and simple. We do not teach, at least in most parts of the country, strong financial literacy in K through 12 education. Yeah, you might take an econ class in 9th or 10th or 11th grade, but that's an overall economics class. It's not a personal financial class. And I know that the saying is, oh, you know, we don't teach kids how to balance a checkbook. I'm not even sure that's the issue. We don't teach financial literacy. We don't teach things like compounding interest. We don't spark in individuals who are 14, 15, 16, 17 years old. We don't spark any sort of major financial discussions in these individuals' heads. Now, I know in a lot of charter and in private education, financial literacy can be, and in some cases is much more prominent because it is a core value that many of those institutions have. But across the vast majority of the K through 12 public education system, it's not taught. And speaking from my own personal experience, I went to a very prominent public school in New York State, one of the best ranked public school systems in the entire state in upstate New York. And there was not a period of time in which I was taught anything even resembling financial literacy. I think maybe junior or sophomore year of high school, I took an economics class, but it wasn't like personal finance or anything like that. It was a broader discussion of the economy, supply and demand, stuff like that, which is absolutely important. I'm not discounting that teaching, but there was no discussion at all on important personal financial principles. It just wasn't a thing. And even to this day, it is still not a thing for the vast majority of America. It's just not. And I feel, and this might be a little bit of a harsh statement, but I feel strongly about it. We are setting up our teenagers and young adults we are setting them up for failure, plain and simple. When we fail to discuss these very important issues with, again, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds, when we don't have any of these discussions, there is no doubt in my mind that we are setting those individuals up, which would now be called Gen Z, right? Those individuals are now heading into their early 20s or mid to late 20s. We have set them up for financial ruin. And it starts very early. What happens when you're 16, 17, 18 years old? You're going through high school and you are determining and deciding how many tens of thousands of dollars that you are going to borrow to go to college. And in some cases, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. And in many cases, It's hundreds of thousands of dollars for useless degrees that have no practical application in the real world. So here we go. We have now told a 17-year-old high school student that they can go and they, due to the backing of the federal government, you can thank Barack Obama for that, you can go and borrow $150,000. You can get an absolutely useless degree. And I'm not trying to be a jerk about this stuff, but you can get a useless degree in German art history at a prominent institution at the cost of $150,000. You'll graduate when you're 21, 22 years old, 23 years old, and you will be completely unemployable in the workforce. You are going to work a hourly job as a barista, as somebody in the food service industry. You're going to be making $9 to $11 an hour if you're lucky, and that's how you're going to start off your life at 22, 23 years old. You've got 150 grand worth of student debt. You're working 30 some odd hours a week, making 11 bucks an hour. And we wonder why the middle class feels like they can't get ahead. We wonder why you've got people who are in their 50s that are still paying off their student loan debt from when they were 20 years old. It's because we have not taught them any sort of financial literacy. And it is a major, major problem. I pulled a recent report from Wallet Hub, which is a great financial website. They look into a whole plethora of financial issues, and they do these reports, a whole bunch of these different reports throughout the year. It's a really good resource for looking into some of these larger financial issues. And so just reading a little bit from a report that they released in September of this year dealing with financial literacy, it says this: Wallet Hub conducted surveys to explore various aspects of financial behavior and attributes, providing insights into financial literacy, budgeting, savings, and financial resolutions among different demographics. So here's what some of the findings are. Gen Z, which is the current generation, is the least financially confident generation, as more than one in four Gen Zers say that they are not confident in their financial knowledge or skills. So you've got less than 25% of Gen Z, less than one in four, that say that they are confident in finances, budgeting, living within their means, spending less than they make, less than one in four. Miserable statistic. 66% of Gen Zers think savings accounts are the best way to invest their money, while 38% of millennials, the next generation older, think that investing in the stock market is a better option. So there's your issue. 66% of Gen Z thinks putting money in a savings account where you are generating, what, less than 1% in most cases, maybe 1% interest a year, is your best way to invest your money. It's not. And when you compare this to other generations, it's obvious that financial literacy skills have completely evaporated. 58% of baby boomers and 43% of millennials, compared to 41% of Gen Xers, prefer a financial professional as their go-to source for financial advice, while 50% of Gen Zers prefer a family member. And so you can see the erosion of financial literacy. It's not being taught, it's not being talked about, and it's a mess. And it is setting up individuals, I would argue, for financial ruin, for financial failure, to spend the first 20 years of their life out of college trying to figure out how to pay for a college degree, in many cases, which is completely useless and unemployable, to begin their life. So now you're getting out of a financial hole at 40 years old instead of 25 or 30 years old. It's a miserable situation. More than one in three college students would give their personal finance grade a C or worse, while 46% of college students say that their schools have not adequately prepared them for financial independence. So let's just round that up a little bit. 50% of college students say that they're not prepared for financial independence. Meanwhile, the federal government has already told them, yeah, sure. You want to go out and you want to borrow 80, 90,000, 100, 120, 150, 175. You want to borrow $175,000 at the age of 18 years old? Yeah, we'll back that up. What could possibly go wrong? What possibly could the issue be here? No issue at all. If you walked into a bank at 18 years old and said, I'd like to borrow $175,000 with no plan, they would laugh you out of the bank. Absolutely laugh you out. But if you say, oh, I'm going to go get a degree in Egyptian calligraphy, then absolutely, step right up, sign on the dotted line. We'll give you as much money as you want. I mean, it's just an insane situation. Here's a really depressing stat for you. 55% of people, this is across the board, say that they are not confident that they could cover an unexpected expense. Nearly 1 in 5 Americans say that they could not come up with $1,000 in cash within 24 hours to save a loved one's life. 1 in 5 say that they couldn't do that. That's not a good situation at all. 1 in 4 students think that their tuition is not a good investment. Well, there's a huge problem there. The top postgraduate fear among students is finding a job, 44%, followed by student loan debt at 33% and credit card debt at 18%, with 2 in 3 students thinking that their school is not doing enough to educate them about personal finance. So 66% of students say, I'm not prepared. My school, of which I'm paying tens of thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars a year to attend, is not doing enough to educate me about personal finance. 66%. It's a disaster. And there's a kind of a some other data and some other charts in here. I mean, this is financial literacy rates by generation. Gen Z, 38%. Gen Y, which comes after them, 46%. Gen Z, 51%. Baby boomers, 55%, and the silent generation, 55% as well, with Gen Z having the lowest financial literacy rate at 38%. And this data, is unfortunately backed up in the current state of the U.S. economy. Here's a report I pulled from from about a month ago, back on November the 6th. U.S. household debt has surged by $197 billion in quarter three of 2025 to a record $18.59 trillion. $18.59 trillion. This puts total household debt up $642 billion just in the span of 12 months, year over year. The surge was driven by mortgage debt, which rose $137 billion to a record $13.07 trillion. Credit card debt has climbed $24 billion to a $1.23 trillion total. That's an all-time high. Student loans jumped by $15 billion. That number currently sits at $1.65 trillion, also a record. And auto loans remained essentially flat, but still at $1.66 trillion and rose $11 billion year over year. With the report ending by saying, Americans are piling on debt at a rapid pace. And if you don't believe me, if you think I'm full of it, here's a chart to back it up. This goes back to quarter one of 2003, so over the span of a little more than 20 years. Showing the total debt balance and its composition. Now, the green, let me pull this up full screen so we can look at this. The orange in this chart is mortgages, which makes sense, right? That's obviously a huge amount of money that you borrow to buy a house. Most people don't buy houses for cash. It's not a practical thing for the vast majority of people. So no question about it, you see the orange as the largest of these debts. And going back to 2003, that was an issue. But a couple of other things I pulled out of this that I found very interesting. Auto loans. And I know the car market's been crazy over the last couple of years, but this light green color is auto loans. And that, look at the percentage with auto loans. It's like 9% now. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but auto loans and cars are a terrible investment. Cars depreciate at an unbelievable rate. So when you've got 9% of all total debt balances being wrapped up in a depreciating asset, which is a car, it's a miserable situation. So you've got 9% in auto loans, 7% in credit card debt with incredibly high interest rates, 9% in student loans. This is not a good chart. This is not a good graph, and this is not a good trend in any way, shape, or form. There is nothing that you can look at in this chart and say, we are trending in the right direction. Now, you can see back in 2008, obviously during the financial crisis there, credit card debt ballooned a little bit. Makes sense. Folks were struggling, putting more on a credit card than they'd like to. It kind of moderated and mediated, though, as we headed into 2010. And since that period of time has been rising. And a large, you can see kind of the beginning inclines in that in the first quarter of 2021. You know, this is still less than a year into COVID-19, and it's continued at a very rapidly accelerated pace. So this is a major problem. Every single quarter, we are hitting all-time record highs in household debt, mortgage debt, credit card debt, auto loan debt, student loan debt. Every single quarter, it's going up, 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 and up. And it's not sustainable. It's just not. And part of this is happening, in large part, this is happening because the data backs this up from WalletHub, that individuals do not feel confident in financial literacy. They do not truly understand anything about personal finances, or if they do, it's very little. Like Gen Zers believing putting money in a savings account is a good investment. I don't invest in retirement. I put all my money in my savings account, and I think I'm going to retire on that, as it gains no interest and provides very little, if any, increase to individuals. It's insane. And this is a major, major issue. And it's not, I say this to you honestly, this isn't just my opinion on the issue. I mean, the data backs it up. Again, here's the financial literacy rates by generation, according to this WalletHub survey from just a couple of months ago. 38% of Gen Z says that they have any sort of financial literacy. 38%. I know doing math on the air is doing math in front of a crowd is always a risky venture, but what about the other 62%? So 62% of Gen Z has zero financial literacy skills, has no idea how to do anything with personal finance. Part of this is a literacy issue, and part of it is a social issue. And this part needs to be described, and Leslie's bringing up a good point in our Rumble live chat this morning. Financial literacy comes with sacrifice. And unfortunately, in the more recent generations, and I don't want to paint this with a broad brush because I understand that not every single person falls under this category, but there is a growing concern with Gen Z, millennials, and all of these other more recent generations, people under the age of 40, that making hard decisions, sacrificing, is just something that we're not interested in doing. We're just not interested in doing it. We'd like to go out to eat 3, 4, 5 times a week. We'd like to go out and get drinks with our friends Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. We love shopping on Amazon. We love finding a deal, put that in air quotes for you. And there's really not been any substantial discussion with this group of individuals that making these sort of sacrifices early on in your life, not like physically on age, but early on in your life when you graduate college and are beginning the process of finding a job, figuring out what you're going to do, where you're going to live, the discussion about making a sacrifice is almost non-existent. Leslie puts in our chat, Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University is wise, but sacrificial. I led a session years ago and 60% dropped out. They did not want to live frugally for a period of time to dig themselves out of debt. There's your issue. And to Leslie's comment in our Rumble live chat this morning, that is the unfortunate story of most individuals that have led and taught that class. It's hard to do that, though. I want to go out to eat. I want to buy said item on Amazon. I want to drive a new car. I want to have the latest iPhone 17. I want to have this. I want to have that. We have a needs versus wants problem in America. And all of this stuff intertwines together. Young individuals don't have a lot of financial literacy skills. I'm not blaming them. I'm not pointing the finger. It's not their fault. We have failed them. The system has failed them in completely admonishing personal responsibility for the for this issue of financial literacy. We have that problem. We have a social media problem. We've got a keeping up with the Joneses issue. We've got another comment coming in on our chat, instant gratification. We get that when we shop online. I'm just as guilty as everybody else. You buy something on Amazon, it's on your doorstep in the span of 48 hours. We have an instant gratification problem. We have a financial literacy problem. We have a need versus want problem. And it is setting up a generation for absolute financial ruin. And it's going to absolutely screw the United States of America. I mean, it is setting up a miserable responsibility. There's a very valid question coming up in our chat. What about parents' responsibility to teach and show by example? That's a great point. But there is also a large swath of parents of children that are not in that position. They are racking up and piling up credit card debt. They are living outside of their means. And how can you can't teach financial literacy if you're not leading it yourself? And that's not a shot at anybody. It's not meant to be a got you, but it's the God's honest truth. I mean, again, look back at this. Let's look back at this chart here and look at some of these numbers. U.S. household debt is at $18.59 trillion. Credit card debt is at $1.23 trillion, an all-time high. Auto loans, $1.66 trillion. Student loans, $1.65 trillion. Everybody is responsible for this. Everybody is living outside of their means. And so, yes, to the discussion of, oh, is this a parent's responsibility? Yes, if they are financially literate. But even the numbers from Wallet Hub don't back that up. You've only got 51% of Gen X that says that they're financially literate. The other 50 are not. So you've got half of parents that have financial literacy and are capable of living within their means. So how can they pass that on to their children? How can they pass that down to the next generation when they themselves are not living by it? And it's becoming more and more of an issue now because of what I'll describe as the quick availability to spend money, which is a huge, huge problem. If you spend any time on social media, Instagram, Facebook, even X, you cannot scroll for more than a couple of minutes without seeing an ad to buy something. And in some cases, and I've done this, probably not the smartest decision, but you click that you want to buy said item and you double tap on my iPhone, you double tap the lock button, you pay with you pay with Apple Pay, and the product shows up on your door in a couple of business days. Literally no effort at all. I didn't have to drive anywhere. I didn't even have to put a credit card or a debit card into the system. It's got it because it's already built into my phone. I've already got it linked. And the product is just there. And so it's so easy to spend money, unfortunately. It's so easy to live outside of your means that that is exactly what is happening. And because I am of the mindset that there is a lack of basic knowledge when it comes to financial literacy, it seems normal. And I would argue for the vast majority of Americans, it is normal. It is abnormal to not be carrying around credit card debt. The numbers and data would back that up. It is abnormal to not have a car loan. It is abnormal to not live outside of your means. And Patlaw is writing in our Rumble live chat this morning, normal is broken. That takes generations, but you've got to get started. Exactly. Normal is broken, but it is normal. It is the norm. If you were looking at this in a scale of 0 to 100%, the norm or normal would be a position of, in some cases, crippling amounts of consumer debt. Student loan debt, a little bit different. It's not consumer debt as you would expect it. But again, it starts early. At 16, 17 years old, you are told that you can go out and borrow hundreds of thousands of dollars to get a degree that in some cases is completely useless in the real world. And then you are responsible for paying off $95,000 worth of student loan debt, making $30,000 or $40,000, $50,000 a year. It takes forever to pay it off. It's not practical. Oh, and at the same time, you've just graduated school. You want to get married. You want to start a family. It's not like you have no other expenses. So it's a miserable situation. But going back to a comment that Mike made in our live chat, that change takes generations, but you've got to get started. And the announcement in the White House yesterday, the announcement in the Oval Office yesterday by President Trump and Michael and Susan Dell is how that change begins. It's called a Trump account. Funny name, all things considered. And Michael and Susan Dell are not only talking about it, they are investing significantly to course correct and make this change. We'll get into those details. I've got some audio and video from the Oval Office address yesterday from President Donald Trump. We'll hear from Michael Dell and his wife, Susan, as well, about why they are doing what they are doing. We'll get into those details coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Before that, I want to thank the law group here in Wilmington for their continued support of the Nick Craig Show and keeping us on the air each and every weekday morning. And let you know, when legal challenges arise, trust the law group in Wilmington. For now more than 22 years, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. They're not some big national law firm. They're right here in our backyard. Melissa Gott and her team, they live in our community, and they're located in downtown Wilmington, just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group. Experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the law group, Melissa Gott and her team, and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. We'll talk about the Trump account plus an incredibly generous gift from Michael and Susan Dell coming up after this as the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Wednesday morning, streaming live, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us. You can get access to all of our show notes and more, including our monthly holiday hangout, which is going to be coming up in the next couple of weeks as we round out 2025 and approach a one-year mark of the Nick Craig Show coming up in January. You can support the show if you believe that you are getting some value for as little as $5 or $10 a month. You can do that over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Thanks to so many of our great patrons, many of them watching live this morning on our various live channels. Cannot thank you enough for your support and giving me the opportunity to do this show each and every weekday morning. So back when the One Big Beautiful Bill was signed on July the 4th, there was a provision in there that is called the Trump account, which, of course, Democrats hate. But the idea with the Trump account is that when you have a child, a new child is born, that the federal government will invest $1,000 into an account for newborn babies. And that became practical under the One Big Beautiful Bill. So we heard about this in June and into early July, but it really hadn't to this point come to any fruition. As you can imagine, something like this takes some time to deal with. And so the other name for this is the Money Accounts for Growth and Advancement, which is the long name for the actual account, now being rebranded as the Trump account, would enable the federal government to make a one-time contribution of $1,000 into a tax-deferred, low-cost index fund account that will track the overall stock market, which is what you would want to do with a long-term investment from a safe standpoint. I don't know exactly what the number is right now, but like, you know, when you look at index accounts, indexing the overall stock market, it's something like an 8-12% on average every year over, you know, 50 or 100 years. That's kind of what the stock market does. And so when we talk about setting up the next generation for success, obviously education is a big part of it, having actual education so that you can read and write and be a productive, useful member of society. But finances is a big part of that as well. I mean, if you've got people struggling their entire lives financially, that does not set any sort of prosperity going forward. And as we were just talking about, and the question was asked in our chat, why is this not being passed down to the next generation? Why are parents not teaching this? It's because many of them struggle with this as well. And so you've got a kind of a cascading issue going on from generation to generation where this stuff isn't taught. And from generation to generation to generation, the constant discussion is we just can't get ahead. The middle class is getting screwed. We can't get ahead. We can't make it happen. And so sparking financial independence, giving individuals an upper hand, not with free handouts in terms of social service programs from the federal government, not EBT, not food stamps, not Section 8 housing, no handouts, but making a strategic $1,000 investment when a child is born is an absolutely amazing idea. And I even struggled to find some Democrats arguing against this issue. I saw a couple of them. Of course, these individuals are mentally deranged and mentally ill. But I don't know that you're going to find a large sum of people that are against giving middle-class Americans who will be able to benefit from this the most, lower middle-class and even people living on the line of poverty, giving the next generation the ability to have financial security, giving them the ability to generate significant amounts of wealth, to put themselves in some cases, an unbelievable situation by the time that they are 18 years old, is something that, unless you are just completely off your rocker and you just have so much disdain and hatred for President Donald Trump and the Republican Party, is an absolutely phenomenal idea. So in the Oval Office yesterday, President Donald Trump made the announcement before bringing up Michael and Susan Dell, who are making an unbelievably generous donation to said program. Here is the president in the Oval Office yesterday.
And this afternoon, Michael and Susan Dell are committing to one of the largest private donations in American history, which will directly benefit the next generation of American children through the new Trump Accounts program that we created in our One Big Beautiful Bill. And Michael and Susan came to see me along with Brad, and they said, you know, this is an idea. And I said, I think, you know, it sounded just so good and so unique. But that's why he's been so successful and they've been so successful in life and in business, because they're unique. Trump Accounts will be the first, I guess you could say, real trust funds for every American child, allowing family members, employers, corporations, generous donors to contribute money that will be invested and grow over the course of a child's life to be used for their benefit after they turn 18. So in other words, these are children that are going to, an investment's going to be made. That investment's going to continue to grow, we hope, right? We hope. And, but it will. And they'll be, they'll feel like Michael Dell someday. But at 18, they'll have a lot of money, a lot more money than they would have had, and potentially a lot of money. But these accounts will track the overall stock market and will be 100% private property controlled by the child's guardians. In honor of America's 250th anniversary, the Dells are announcing today that they are giving 25 million American children $250 each to save and to invest in their personal Trump account. Now, that's the equivalent of $6.25 billion. In other words, to put it succinctly, Michael and Susan are giving $6.25 billion in total, and as a total contribution. That's big stuff. I don't care who you are. That's big. Come here. Give me a hand. Let me have a little of that luck rub off. That's fantastic, Susan. These gifts will be available to the first 25 million children aged 10 and under the sign, the zip codes, where their median income is $150,000 or less. So they're giving them to children that won't be born particularly rich, and they're going to be hopefully very rich someday. This will give millions of dollars, millions of children, middle-class families, a stake in American prosperity, a benefit from the rising stock market, and a better shot at the American dream. It really gives them a shot at the American dream. Michael and Susan, I want to thank you for this extraordinary act of kindness and patriotism and charity. This is truly one of the most generous acts in the history of our country. I mean, you just don't, you don't hear about things like that. And we got to let people know he doesn't want and she doesn't care about that. But I do. I think when somebody does that, you got to let them know about it. As I mentioned, this gift is being made possible by the largest tax cuts in American history, which our Republican majorities passed earlier this year. And the speaker worked so hard, and John Thune and Jason and all of them, every one of them. Ted Cruz is with us. He works so hard.
And so that's the president bringing up and kind of letting out the discussion and bringing up this conversation. And he said something over and over again. He said about three times in just that short little clip that we played about giving middle-class Americans. And as you know, we talk about this program and we get into some of the logistics of it, giving them a stake in the stock market, giving them some incentive to keep something like this going. Now, and we'll get into some of this as it goes on. Just putting $1,000 in a index fund, a stock market index fund account over the span of 20 years, it's not going to do a whole hell of a lot. It's a relatively small initial investment. You've got to continue to contribute to it. We'll get into some of those details as what that will look like. But you're talking about and let me just go back to this Wallet Hub study here to look at some of the numbers and some of the data to back this up. What did the Wallet Hub survey say? That one in five individuals don't have $1,000 that they have available? Let's see if I can find it. Yeah, here it is. Nearly one in five Americans say that they could not come up with $1,000 in cash within 24 hours to save a loved one's life. Nearly one in five. And so this initial seed investment, for lack of a better term, is being made by the federal government. Depending on where you live, what your zip code is, potentially an extra $250. So now we're at $1,250 as an initial investment into a newborn child, or in the case of what Michael and Susan Dell are doing, individuals under the age of 10 years old, living in zip codes where the median income is less than $150 million. A whopping $6 billion investment. Michael Dell of Dell Computer Company, started that back in college when he was in Texas. That's where he grew up. That's where Dell is still headquartered. Started offering computer repair things and computer upgrades from his college dorm room, turning it into one of the most prominent technology companies anywhere in the world. And now giving back to the American system that allowed him to have unimaginable amounts of wealth. I don't know. I haven't looked up what his current net worth is, but I don't even know what his net worth. He's one of the wealthiest individuals in the United States of America due to the success of Dell Computer. So here's Michael and Susan Dell in the Oval Office yesterday describing why they wanted to move forward with something like this.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a great honor to be with you here in the White House. And, you know, when you passed the Invest America Act on July 4th of this year, we were really inspired to see that happen. And this is something that, Brad had first mentioned to us in 2021. We thought it was a great idea then, and it's amazing that it happened. And we also saw that this act would become a platform. And, you know, we believe the smartest investment that we can make is an investment in children. And this act has created a platform for families and friends and communities and companies and philanthropists to contribute to these accounts to create a savings and opportunity and hope and prosperity for tens of millions of children in this country. And Susan and I are super excited to announce our $6.25 billion gift to 25 million American children, 10 and under, and our gift will cover most of the children that are 10 and under that are not part of the federal program, the 0 to 2 year olds, and who also live in zip codes where the median income is $150,000 or less. And I have spoken with a number of other wealthy Americans, philanthropists, and we are confident that others will join us because we all understand the incredible impact that a gift like this can have on the lives of young Americans. So again, it's a great honor for us to be here to be able to announce this. You know, when I was 8 years old, I got a passbook savings account and I had, I think about $8 in it. And you go to the savings and loan and you give them a quarter and they'd stamp your account. And I got to see the power of compound interest early in my life. And that has brought me here to this moment. And hopefully we'll inspire that kind of opportunity for many more young people in this country. So again, thank you for the privilege of being here.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Susan. So beautiful. Thank you very much. Susan, would you like to say something?
I'd just like to say how excited we are to be a part of this. We believe that when children have a future that they can see is worth saving for, then that will help build hope and opportunity and prosperity for generations to come. So we're so excited to be doing this and hope to have many people join in our efforts. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
I mean, just absolutely remarkable. I mean, just an absolutely remarkable idea, program, and plan being originally brought forth by the Trump administration and being bolstered and backed up by Michael and Susan Dell at the tune of $6.25 billion. And so Fox News put out this chart about the growth, potential growth within one of these Trump accounts with its maximum contribution, which is $5,000 a year. And the because of compounding interest, which we heard about from Michael Dell, I've got a Dave Ramsey video I want to play for you. Because of compounding interest and the max investment of $5,000 a year, this chart shows the amount of money that can be gained in this account. By 18 years old, so starting the second that a child is born, $1,000 goes into that account. At the investment of $5,000 a year over the span of 18 years, the potential amount available at 18 years old with an investment of, again, just $5,000 a year over the span of 18 years, which is, you know, about 90 grand or so, you're looking at a potential amount in that account of over $191,000. Imagine what the change would be in America if at 18 years old, when you are beginning college, you've got $190,000 at your disposal. No more student loans. You graduate college, you can, $190,000 will pay for almost all, except for maybe going to law school or becoming a doctor, some higher level degree. $190,000 is going to pay for your student loan debt. So you've, now you can graduate school having no student loan debt and still potentially, depending on what kind of degree you go for, as much as maybe $100,000 still left in the bank. Down payment for a house, the ability to kickstart your financial success, be able to kick off your life with potentially tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank. Not from your family, not from having a major trust fund set up for you, but by this account with an initial seed amount of $1,000 from the federal government and $5,000 a year worth of investment from a family. And at the age of 60, that could be well over $2.2 million, all thanks to compounding interest. Of which I would love to play this video for you. This is an old video. I don't know when this was produced. It's got to be at least 10 years old. This is Dave Ramsey speaking, hosting some sort of class, and talking about wealth building and compound interest. It's not a long video, but it really goes to show you the power. And again, when you don't teach an issue, a topic, and a philosophy and a principle like compound interest, which is relatively easy to understand, when you don't teach that and individuals don't even know that that exists, don't know that that's even a real thing, it's setting them up for failure. And Dave Ramsey is going to exactly explain in the most simple terms possible what exactly something like this looks like. Here's the great Dave Ramsey.
Compound interest is what we're talking about. It's a mathematical explosion. Einstein said that compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. Now, compound interest is simply this. You take your money down to the bank. Let's take this $1,000, and we take it down to the bank, and we put the money in the bank. Now, you leave it there, and it earns interest, and you leave the interest there. The next year, you earn interest on the $1,000 and on the interest. The next year, you earn interest on the $1,000, on the interest, and on the interest, and you leave it there again. The next year, you earn interest on the $1,000, on the interest, on the interest, and on the interest, and then you leave it there again. That's what compound interest is. The trick with investing is you got to start, and you got to start right now. You got to get started. So we're going to get the $1,000 out of the way. We're going to get the emergency fund built as quickly as we can. We're going to get you out of debt, and then we're going to get you investing as fast as we can in these baby steps, because time needs to be on your side. Let me show you what I'm talking about. Let's look at Ben and Arthur for a minute. Ben starts saving money at 19 years old. He saves $2,000 a year. He does that all the way up until age 26. At age 27, you will notice Ben puts in zero. Say zero.
Zero.
At 27, he quits putting money in, but he's got the pump primed. The snowball is there. It's starting to roll down the hill, and every time it rolls over, it picks up more snow because it's a bigger ball each time it rolls over. Then his brother Arthur on the other side, he looks up and says, ooh, Ben's saving money.
So there is, you've got the kind of platform playing out there on Dave Ramsey, wealth building and compound interest. And I mean, it's a no-brainer. It's an absolute no-brainer. Yet, it's not something that we teach. it's something that is lacking majorly across the United States. And it is probably one of the large reasons that we hear, and you will probably, you will hear this, unfortunately, probably pretty frequently, that you've got a situation where you can't get ahead, where the middle class can't get ahead. And is there some truth to that? Absolutely. Is some of it due to financial situations that people don't have control over? Again, we talked about the economy in general. We talked about interest rates and some of the outside economic pressures that you might deal with. Sure. But a principle like compound interest is valid and relevant regardless of whether inflation is at 9.5% or 2.5%. The basic principle continues to exist. It doesn't change regardless of whether there's a Republican in the Oval Office, a Democrat in the Oval Office, whether inflation is high, whether inflation is low. It just, it doesn't change. And so when you look at this Trump savings account, when you look at this initial seed money from the federal government and the immediate injection of cash and the incentive to families to put a cut, maybe it's not $5,000 a year, maybe it's $2,000 a year, like you saw in that example. Maybe it's $2,000 a year, $1,500 a year that gets put into this account starting at age zero, the right as you're born. Potentially some additional money from Susan and Michael Dell. As they both mentioned, they've talked to their other, and as you can imagine, they've probably got some other incredibly wealthy friends that also are interested in investing in something like this. It's a remarkable situation. And so when you talk about making, when you talk about setting the next generation up for success, when you talk about education and again, we all want to have the next generation set up for success. We want these individuals to be able to live a prosperous life, live the American dream. It starts, and in many cases starts, with financial literacy and smart financial decisions. Leslie's putting in our Rumble live chat this morning. The Democratic Socialist platform on hating millionaires just took a step back. I saw some of those comments on social media yesterday, Leslie, echoing some of those exact same claims, right? Because you'll hear, and this is where it becomes political, you'll hear very often from the progressive left that the eat the rich, the wealthy are the problem, tax the rich, as if somehow taxing the rich is going to make your life any better, which we know unequivocally, without a doubt, won't. I mean, it just won't have any impact, any substantial impact in any way, shape, or form. So this is a huge announcement. This is a major, major announcement. Starting in 2026, children can qualify for either $1,000 or a $250 contribution to this account, which was established by the One Big Beautiful Bill. As I mentioned, Michael and Susan Dell pledging $6.25 billion in this. That's going to cover up to 25 million children under the age of 10. And with the Dell's donation, that $250 additional will be available to each qualifying Trump account next year. Any child under the age of 18 with a social security number can open that account and investment in eligible mutual funds or exchange-traded funds to save for their future. And you can open those accounts beginning in 2026 and investing into those July 4th, 2026, which will be 1 year after the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill. Tell me what the downside is. So what's the worst thing that happens here? You get $1,000 in the account, you never put in another penny, and it still builds some level, it's not going to be a lot, but still builds some level of interest over the span of 18 years, 30 years, 40, 50 years. What's the downside here? If you want to talk about strengthening America's middle class, government is not the answer to said problem. It's not. Thinking that government is going to be there to help, it is going to solve that problem, is a fairy tale. Now, can government help? Yeah, they can with this initial $1,000 investment. But you want to talk about pulling yourself out of the middle class, pulling yourself off the poverty line? It starts with financial literacy. It starts with smart financial decisions. And something like this, which hopefully is going to be incredibly widespread and prominent, hopefully this is something that a lot of folks are going to take advantage of. Starting with something like this is a major, major win. So I don't see a downside. I hope other individuals that are in similar financial positions to the Dells, Michael and Susan, come forth and make similar contributions, setting up families, setting up children for economic prosperity as they go through their teenage years and, you know, look at the possibility of what their life is going to look like, what is financially feasible as they are 16, 17, 18, 19 years old. Again, the chart here, as it was estimated from the Schwab Center for Financial Research, is potentially over $190,000 available at 18 years old, more than $2.2 million at the age of 60. Talk about generational changing things. Talk about setting yourself up for prosperity and success in the future. I can't think of a better way to do it than this. And so you're not going to see a lot of coverage of this. You're not going to see CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times and all these other outlets talking about it, because there's nothing negative here. It's a win-win for everybody involved. And because of that, yeah, they might mention it in passing, but you're not going to see a lot of discussion of this. Hopefully, as we get into next year, as we get close to July 4th, which of course will coincide with the 250th anniversary of the U.S. next year, hopefully there will be some more discussion and conversation about this. This is an absolutely phenomenal idea and could absolutely, and will, if people follow through with this, will absolutely be a generational changing situation unfolding here in the United States of America. I'll have all of these articles, this Wallet Hub study, and a couple of the videos that we played this morning. I'll have those available over on our show notes at patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can subscribe and get access to those daily show notes and more. patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, that's going to do it for a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to the law group here in Wilmington, Melissa Gott and her team, for their continued support. For any legal challenges, give them a call, 910-251-6088, or visit their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Nick Craig Show streams weekday morning, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and is available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back here tomorrow morning on the Nick Craig Show.